Welcome to a special edition of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here on SCScoops.com, episode 261, a bonus show for Monday, February 18th, 2013. I am the Solid Monster. Wanted to take a few minutes here just to recap last night's Elimination Chamber pay-per-view from New Orleans, Louisiana. And speaking of New Orleans, when we're done recapping the pay-per-view, I'll just have some quick news and notes on the WrestleMania press conference that took place at noon today, only a few hours ago. I watched the entire press conference, which was unlike any other press conference you've probably seen. And they officially announced WrestleMania for New Orleans next year in 2014, so we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Last night's pay-per-view, of course, the final one before WrestleMania 29 at MetLife Stadium coming up on April 7th. This was the continuation of the road to WrestleMania. The Rock defending the WWE title against CM Punk in the Royal Rumble rematch. If Rock were to be counted out or DQ'd in the main event, he would lose the championship. So would they actually switch the title, or would they stick to the plan of Rock versus Cena? So we'll get to that. We'll start actually in reverse here with the beginning of the show, which was the pre-show YouTube match, Brodus Clay, Tenzai, apparently on commentary. And just so you know, I watched last night's event from the man cave, I guess you would say, at Brian Blade's house. We had a pretty big crowd of people, actually. Actually, Webmaster Mike was there, as was Noah Mark. So we had the Four Horsemen back together here, perhaps for the final time before WrestleMania. And a bunch of other people, about eight or nine people. And so I was not able to hear most of the commentary throughout the show. There were little bits and pieces here, so I can't really comment if there were any outlandish remarks from Cole or Lawler or JBL. Actually, there was one completely outlandish remark from JBL. And I love JBL on commentary. In fact, I just posted my latest LayfieldReport.com column, cheap plug there, for the Walking Dead. I did have a chance to see last night's episode, which was great. And if you want to check that out, it's actually up on LayfieldReport.com right now. Literally went up about 15 minutes ago. But there was one comment that JBL made, and I actually can't even remember who it was in reference to, but it was he was remarking about the United States Championship or somebody who had held the U.S. title, and he made reference to Ravishing Rick Rude being the WWE United States Champion. And everybody in the room just kind of shook their heads and just kind of moved on. You know, it's just, you know, par for the course with JBL. He's also called Sin Cara, I think, a former AAA and CMLL world champion, which is not true, although I'm sure Sin Cara is appreciative of that. That was the only real outlandish comment I picked up on, so I can't comment too much on that. But as far as the matches are concerned, I went 5-2 in my predictions, which is not bad at all. Tenzai, Brodus Clay against the Rhodes Scholars reunited. I guess Cody and Damian, they did some mic work before the match, mentioned that they were on their reunion tour, and they lost. As I predicted, Tenzai and Brodus got the win. Apparently on commentary, they referred to them as the Dancing Bears. Yeah, I just recorded episode 260 of the Sound Off yesterday, and we were talking about this subject, and I sure hope the Dancing Bears is not the actual name that has been selected for them. Hopefully it was just something Matt Stryker came up with on his own on commentary. Awful name. So, Tenzai and Brodus win, and the Rhodes Scholars are just fodder, I guess, for... You know, it's interesting to me, because when they initially broke them up, I was somewhat hopeful that perhaps it was because they had something in mind for at least Cody, if not Cody and Damian, and it just seems to me like they're just being played for comedy and nothing more. And ever since Cody came back with the mustache, in fact, I don't think they've really done much, so perhaps he needs to shave that goddamn thing off his face. And maybe that'll change their fortunes around. The pay-per-view open, much like WrestleMania, probably will open with the World Heavyweight Championship on the line. Alberto Del Rio defending the championship against The Big Show. They have already had two last man standing matches. And in this match, it was basically the onus was on Del Rio. Can he really beat The Big Show fair and square by pin or make him tap out? And in fact, in this match, Del Rio did make Big Show tap out to the armbar, which puts over his finishing move, so I have no problem with that. I thought the match was okay. I don't think the match was anything exceptional. The one funny thing was, towards the end, Big Show had knocked Ricardo Rodriguez off the apron, and he had grabbed that bucket. And I don't even know why Ricardo brings that bucket with him. It's just kind of pointless to me, but Big Show picked up the bucket and had his back turned. And Del Rio went to deliver an enziguri, and he missed. And Big Show didn't even attempt to sell it. I think Big Show knew. Big Show maybe didn't even know, perhaps, that Del Rio had just executed a move. It completely missed, and so Del Rio just redid it a second time, nailed him with the enziguri, put the cross arm breaker on, got the tap out. I was begging at this point for Big Show to get up, and when Del Rio, you know, was celebrating and climbing the turnbuckles, just wait until Del Rio climbed back down and just knock him out so that Ziggler could then come out and cash in his money in the bank. But unfortunately, that did not happen. So there you go. Del Rio retains the championship. We had Antonio Cesaro and The Miz for the United States Championship, which was okay. Horrendous finish. Just a terrible finish to this match. Miz inadvertently delivered a low blow to Cesaro, and perhaps for the first time in history on an accidental low blow, the referee called for the DQ. And so Cesaro wins. He retains the championship on a lame disqualification. Miz flips out. Miz then says, well, fuck it, I already lost. And so he kicks Cesaro blatantly in the balls and gives him a anything but inadvertent low blow when the match was over. So this would seem to indicate that this feud is not over. And it makes me think that perhaps we're in for a Miz-Cesaro U.S. title match at WrestleMania, which, you know, it'll be nice to see Antonio Cesaro have a match at WrestleMania, his first. I could do without Cesaro and Miz. I just... doesn't do anything for me, but it does seem that's the direction that we're going in. Unless they switch the title on TV sometime in the next couple of weeks, I guess we'll see exactly what they decide to do with that. From there, we go to the Elimination Chamber match, the pay-per-view called the Elimination Chamber. There's one chamber match this year, and it goes on third, so that's kind of odd. Chris Jericho, Randy Orton, Mark Henry, Kane, Daniel Bryan, and Jack Swagger. Jack Swagger came out to new theme music, which has already grown on me. I actually like the new music. It sounds, I don't know, it sounds very military-esque, perhaps. Maybe that's the idea they're going for, but I like it. He needed new music anyway. And so he comes out with Zeb Coulter, cuts a promo. And at this point, you know, once I saw that Del Rio retained and Ziggler was not cashing in, I pretty much knew at that point that Swagger was going to win. I even said that on Twitter. I said, I figure Swagger is winning at this point. You couple that with the fact that, you know, they brought this guy back. They've given him a new manager. They've now given him new theme music. When they do stuff like that, they tend to be putting their weight behind you. So all of those things taken together, I pretty much figured Swagger's going over in this match. And that's exactly what happened. Jack Swagger, after a year of winning one match on Monday Night Raw, being the butt of everybody's jokes, takes a couple of months off TV, comes back, and he is now in the running to get a World Heavyweight Championship match at WrestleMania. It's quite the turnaround for his career. I can't say that a Swagger Del Rio match does much for me. I said that on episode 260 this weekend. Perhaps, you know, they've got 6 weeks, 7 weeks to convince me otherwise and get me into this match. But when I hear WrestleMania, the first thing I hear Jack Swagger and Alberto Del Rio for the World Heavyweight title, and that, to me, barely qualifies as a main event match or SmackDown match. I think they're going to have to work real hard to convince people that this is worthy of being a world title match, but good for Swagger. Good for Swagger. I mean, he was on a path to nowhere, and now they're actually giving him a push, and I think that's pretty cool. As far as the match itself, it was pretty good, actually. Not the greatest chamber match there's ever been. The tail end of the match, the last 10 minutes or so, was actually really, really good. Came down to Chris Jericho, Randy Orton, and Jack Swagger. Mark Henry was a man on a mission in this match. It took a whole bunch of moves. Jericho gave him a code breaker. Orton gave him an RKO. That's how they eliminated Henry. And what Henry did was he came back, and he ended up destroying everybody that was left in the chamber. He gave everybody a World's Strongest Slam. They sent a whole bunch of referees out there. Booker T came out there. I thought he was going to attack Booker T, but he didn't do that. But just the sight of all the bodies being strewn about, all the referees in there, Booker having to come down, it was really it really illustrated what a monster this man is. So if they had to eliminate Mark Henry, this was really the best way to do it. I thought they handled that very well. And, you know, nothing else really stands out to me. There was a pact made before the match with Kane and Bryan that, you know, Bryan said he would watch Kane's back, and Kane said, okay, you watch my back, and I'll watch mine. So Kane never exactly said he was going to watch his partner's back. They were both eliminated, predictably. I didn't think either one really stood a chance. And the story to me at the end, and I made a comment on Twitter, and some people didn't exactly know where I was coming from on this as far as telegraphing a potential Randy Orton heel turn. But I looked at this as Randy Orton at the end is on a roll. He's going crazy, beating everybody up. He gets schoolboyed by Jack Swagger, and essentially, you know, he may try to pass it off as a fluke win. No, but still, Jack Swagger wins. Randy Orton is incredulous at the end of this match. He cannot believe that he lost. He probably can't believe he got beat, of all people, by Jack Swagger. And they had a camera shot of Orton looking up at the WrestleMania sign. And they made it a point to focus on this and make sure they got that on camera. And the look on Orton's face was just one of complete bewilderment, as though Orton perhaps was second-guessing himself. That's where I thought perhaps it was telegraphing a heel turn or some sort of attitude change for Orton going forward. We've heard the rumors of an Orton heel turn for a while now. Orton himself has made no bones about the fact that he prefers to be heel. He's so stale and so bland, I think it would be the best thing for him. Perhaps that was a sign. That's the direction they're going in. I'm not sure. But a big win for Jack Swagger, and I thought a pretty good chamber match. It went a solid half hour. A lot of action, really more towards the end, I think. Everybody at one point was in the chamber, so nobody was eliminated, for example, before the last person came out of the pod, so the ring was full at one point. That's when things started to pick up. Mark Henry, I think, threw Randy Orton, if I remember correctly, through one of the chambers. The glass broke, only it didn't shatter, so it didn't look quite as impressive. But pretty good match, and again, it looks like they're going in the direction of the anti-immigrant folks against the Mexican heavyweight champion. So that's the story heading into WrestleMania. Up next, we had the six-man tag, John Cena, Sheamus, Ryback, against The Shield, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, and Roman Reigns. And I predicted that the Babyface Brigade would come out on top in this match. I said that if The Shield at least looks competitive like they did back at TLC, even if they lose, they don't lose much steam coming out of this pay-per-view. At some point, The Shield has to lose. At some point, they're going to lose. Everybody loses at some point. I honestly did not think it would happen at this show. I was stunned. I was floored by the outcome of this match. I did not see this coming. And you can't even say that it was a situation where, you know, the baby faces started arguing amongst each other. Sheamus accidentally hit Ryback, or Ryback accidentally speared, you know, Cena, or somebody interfered. This was much like TLC, and perhaps that's what's most shocking to me. This was a clean, clear-cut victory for The Shield over three of the biggest babyfaces in the entire company. And on top of that, it was a pretty damn good match. The Shield now is 2-for-2 in matches, and they're 2-for-2 in having pretty kick-ass matches as well. To me, this was my favorite match on the entire pay-per-view. To me, some people might say the Chamber. I say this was the best match on the entire show. No gimmicks. They didn't do the Chamber for this match like the War Game style. This was just a straight six-man tag match. The fans were into it. The fans were loud. They were boisterous. And the match was set up like an old-school six-man tag wrestling match. John Cena was in there most of the time getting his ass handed to him. He was, you know, being beaten mercilessly by The Shield, finally made the hot tag. I thought the way this match was set up was just great. The Shield played their roles perfectly. They had a great spot later in the match where Roman Reigns took out Sheamus with a spear through the barricade, which was the same spot they used on Kane back at TLC. So that's how they got Sheamus out of the equation. I thought for sure at the end they were setting up for some sort of like double pin where Cena gave, I forgot which member it was, but maybe Ambrose, he gave him an attitude adjustment. Ryback, I think, had, I want to say Rollins, he had up for the shell shock. And what happened is Roman Reigns came from out of nowhere, gave Ryback the mother of all spears. It was just a great spot. Rollins, I think, fell on top of Ryback is what happened, and he got the pin. 1-2-3. I mean, my mouth was just wide open. Everybody I was watching with were high-fiving each other. People were pleasantly surprised, I think would be the best way to describe it. And just very cool to see. I don't really know what else to say. I'm still kind of shocked, quite frankly. I've never been happier to be wrong about a prediction. This was a great match. This was a great outcome that keeps The Shield positioned very strong. I figure going into WrestleMania, I mean, I don't know what other six-person troop you put against The Shield, so I figure they're, you know, perhaps they'll take two members of The Shield and put them up against Hell No, and maybe give them a tag team championship win. I mean, Kane and Bryan have been champions now since, I want to say, September. They've been champions for a long time. I think the time is right for them to drop the belts. I thought they were going to drop the belts to the Road Scholars at the Royal Rumble, and then they just unceremoniously broke them up. But I think the time is right. And as far as, you know, which members of the Shield go in there, you could do any combination you want to. I mean, it's kind of like the old Axe Smash and Crush deal with Demolition back in the early 90s. I figure they probably take Reigns. They probably want Roman Reigns to be in there as the muscle. You pit Reigns and Rollins, put them together as a team with Ambrose maybe in their corner. I could see them doing that. That's what I figure the Shield plan is for WrestleMania. I don't have any, you know, inside knowledge of that or anything, but this was great. This was the best thing on the entire show. I love this. After the six-man tag, we had Mr. Money in the Bank, Dolph Ziggler, out with AJ and Big E. Ziggler was all dressed for competition, so he must have figured he was going to be put in a match. Otherwise, I'm not quite sure why he would bother getting suited up, being that he had no match on this pay-per-view. He came out. He referred to Jack Swagger as Swags, I believe, at one point. Was basically just doing a promo about how good he was. And Booker T came out, and Booker T said, I have an opponent for you. I figured it was going to be Christian. Christian was my prediction. And much to my disappointment, it was Kofi Kingston. Kofi Kingston, who, as Noah Mark will point out, we had a discussion and a debate about this last night, among other things. He is very perturbed by the fact that Kofi Kingston has basically been losing every single match ever since he lost the Intercontinental title. I mean, Noah wasn't even, nor am I sure if Kofi's even won a match on television since losing the championship. And he doesn't seem to understand why. He doesn't know why. He seems very bothered by this. I don't know if, you'd almost think he had a financial stake in Kofi's career, the way that he was going on about this last night. And, you know, I just figure it's just Kofi's time to job. You know, he was the IC champ for a while. He was getting a little bit of a push. And now he's just on the downswing. I don't think he's done anything wrong. I don't think he's in the doghouse or anything like that. It's just his time to lose and help put other people over. And if anything, I thought Kofi looked pretty goddamn good in this match. It was a quick 3 or 4 minute match against Dolph Ziggler. Kofi did some pretty impressive things, some dives in this match. And I thought for a brief moment there that they might actually have Ziggler do the job, since that's his MO of late. He seems to lose every single match he's in. They did another spot where he was kind of distracted by AJ and some stuff that was going on, or Big E, I forgot who, but Kofi gave him the trouble in paradise, and I figured, oh my God, they're going to have him lose. But Big E reached in, pulled Dolph out. Why he wasn't disqualified, I have no idea. The referee clearly saw what happened. And Big E reached in, interfered, but yet the ref did not call for the DQ. And so, in the end, Kofi got beat, Dolph wins. You know, it's a way, I guess, to get him on the pay-per-view. But really, that's the best thing they could come up with for Dolph Ziggler on this show, is to stick him in an unadvertised match against Kofi Kingston and barely have him win by the skin of his teeth. This guy is... Oh, boy. I don't know. I don't know what to say about it. I mean, I got a couple of emails overnight from people asking me why people should care. Why should they care about Dolph Ziggler? Why should we take him seriously as a threat, as a potential world champion? And I don't really have a good answer for you. You know, I guess the WWE's logic in this is we can beat this guy as much as possible. If somebody is gonna go over and win a championship, their MO, the company, that is you can beat them as much as you want to, because it doesn't matter. In the end, they're going to win the championship, and the championship will help rehab them. The championship will help get them over. So it's fine. They could just lose all the time. I happen to think that that is a bullshit theory. I don't agree with that. I think that's crap. But that's obviously how they feel. They feel they can beat this dude as much as possible, and in the end, he'll win the championship, and everything will be okay. And with Dolph, I'm not too worried. I know... You know, he'll be fine. Dolph is good enough, and I think the babyface turn will be coming at some point in the next few months. And I think that's going to be the key in terms of getting him over, because right now he just seems to be in a holding pattern. So I think he'll be fine, but as far as that whole philosophy is concerned, personally, I think it's a bunch of crap. We had a Divas Championship match on this show. It was Caitlyn defending the title against Tamina Snuka, just kind of there. Really, just to be a buffer more than anything else between the previous match and the main event. Diva stopwatch, 3 minutes, 15 seconds, which, even by pay-per-view standards, let alone normal standards, is pretty poor. We had a couple of Divas matches on some of the recent pay-per-views that went a good 5 or 6 minutes, so this was not good. The match itself was, you know, nothing special. Tamina missed the splash off the top rope, and Caitlyn gave her her spear for the pin. I made a comment why they would okay the same finish for two matches on the same show. You know, we had a spear to end the six-man tag with the Shield. Then we had the Dolph match, and right after that we had another match with a spear finish. So I don't know who booked that, if it were different agents booking the matches. I just thought that was something you would try to avoid, but I guess not. Main event, WWE Championship match, The Rock defending against CM Punk. The first time that Rock has defended the championship since 2002. Little fact there for you. And most likely his only title defense between between now and then. We had the match started with Punk doing everything in his power to try to incite The Rock. Because, again, the stipulation was that if The Rock gets DQ'd, he loses the championship. Now, for those of you who may have forgotten, less than a year ago, which would have been at WrestleMania 28, in the WWE Championship match, we had the exact same stipulation involving CM Punk, only in this case, the roles were reversed. They had Jericho and Punk for the title, and on the pay-per-view, so they didn't even announce this like 6 days before on Raw. They just had a shot of CM Punk backstage at WrestleMania at Sun Life Stadium about to come out, and John Laurinaitis confronted him and said, if you get disqualified, you lose the championship. And then if you remember, Chris Jericho was talking about Punk's father and, you know, really trying to get under his skin at the beginning of that title match and try to get him DQ'd. This was essentially the same exact thing. And much like that match, aside from a brief moment here and there, the stip really didn't even come into play. It was a little bit at the beginning. Again, Punk was trying to make him mad. He hocked a loogie at one point, spit right in Rock's face. They got a great camera shot of this disgusting phlegm just sitting there right on Rock's forehead. It reminded me of when Orton spat in Foley's face, you know, which was just disgusting. And so Rock, of course, loses his shit. He goes after Punk. He's beating him down in the corner. Mike Chioda pulls him out and says, listen, you better be careful. I'm going to DQ you. And then Rock shoves Chioda aside and keeps, you know, beating on Punk. And aside from that, and then one spot a little bit later on where Punk took Rock outside the ring and actually gave Rock a rock bottom on the Spanish announce table. So they tried to recreate the spot that went sour on the Royal Rumble last month when the table broke too soon. Rock was going to rock bottom Punk. This time, Punk did give Rock a rock bottom, and the table did not break. So I'm sure for Rock, that did not feel too good. I guess they felt like we have to reinforce this table this time, only they reinforced it a little too much. And so, and that's happened a couple of times. You know, it's not the first time something like that has happened. I still remember, actually two things stand out to me. One was the Triple H Cactus Jack street fight from Madison Square Garden at the Royal Rumble. Foley, if I remember correctly, gave Triple H one of his, inverted DDTs, which looks brutal as it is, but he tried it on the announce desk and the table didn't break. So for Triple H, that sucked. And it also makes me remember the Randy Orton-Christian match from Money in the Bank 2011, which was the same pay-per-view Punk won the title for the first time against Cena. If you remember that, after that match, which, funny enough that I bring that up now that I think about it, Christian won the title from Orton in that match on a disqualification. Because, yeah, that's true, actually, and I just randomly brought that up. How about that? The stipulation for that match was that if Randy Orton got disqualified, he would lose the championship. And in fact, he did lose the championship because Christian spit in his face. And so Orton kicked Christian in the balls, and Christian won the world title. So, boy, feels like Groundhog Day sometimes with these stipulations. But anyway, the reason I brought that up was after the match, Orton went nuts, and he attacked Christian. And he put Christian on top of the Spanish announce table, gave him an RKO on top of the table, and the table did not break. And Orton went to leave, and then he said, fuck this, I'm going to come back and try it again. So he went back to the ring, dragged Christian back on top of the announce desk, gave him another RKO on the same table that he softened up a little bit earlier, and the table still didn't break. So it happens sometimes. You know, it happens. So Punk went in the ring. The count is on. Rock, if he gets counted out, loses the title. And he cut it pretty close, too, for a split second there. I thought they were actually going to do a count-out finish. Rock was nowhere near the ring, and the referee was rapidly approaching the 10 count. Rock got in just in the nick of time. Aside from that, the stipulation didn't come into play at all for the rest of the match. And, you know, the match itself was good. I don't think the match was as good as their match at the Royal Rumble last month. There was a long rest hold in the middle of the match, so I'm not sure if Rock was just gassed. He looked a little bit gassed to me. I don't know if that's just how he looks. Rock sold for most of the match. He gave Punk a lot in this match. In fact, they went out of their way to make Punk look real strong, and they actually had a spot. They had a ref bump in the match, and Punk executed the go-to-sleep on the Rock. Had the Rock beat. He had the visual pin on the Rock, but there was no referee there to count the fall. And so CM Punk can come out on Raw tonight and claim that he was once again screwed out of the championship, and he would have a valid excuse because, again, he had Rock clearly beat, and there was no ref there to count the fall. So sucks for Punk. It happened again later in the match as well. A new ref came out. Then he somehow in all of this, the second referee, I guess, rolled his ankle. It looked really, really phony. You know, like, really? He rolled out of the ring. Like, the referee couldn't stay in the ring and just keep doing his job, really. So Punk definitely has an excuse if that's the direction they want to go in tonight on Raw. But in any event, match went on. Rock made his comeback in the end. He did hit a rock bottom on Punk. Punk kicked out. Punk actually kicked out, I think, of the People's Elbow as well, which was a great false finish, being that he lost to the People's Elbow last month. I don't think I could stomach CM Punk losing 2 months in a row to the People's Elbow. So thankfully, he kicked out of that. And in the end, Punk went to hit Rock with the title. Paul Heyman was holding Rock, which just, I think we could all see what was coming at that point. Punk accidentally hit Heyman. Very weak shot, I might add, with the title. Obviously, he didn't want to hurt him. And when he turned around right into a Rock bottom. 1-2-3. And the Rock retains the WWE Championship. So, again, Punk looks strong. He took most of the match. He's got a valid excuse if they want to have another Rock-Punk match, maybe on TV. I don't see Punk being involved in the main event at WrestleMania. I'm pretty sure that we will probably see Undertaker, if not tonight, very, very soon, to set up the match with Punk. And Rock retains, and we are left with twice in a lifetime at WrestleMania 29. CM Punk out of the picture, unfortunately for him. And that was your pay-per-view, Elimination Chamber. I thought overall it was a good show. Not great, but, you know, especially the tail end of the Chamber match was very good. The Shield match was just great. The outcome shocked the hell out of me. And the main event also was pretty good. So to me, that's a thumbs-up pay-per-view. Again, nothing outstanding, but I did not feel cheated. Then again, it might have just been because my share of the pay-per-view last night amongst the eight of us who watched it was $7. So essentially, I paid $7. To watch this show. Perhaps people who paid $45 maybe felt a little bit cheated, but I don't see any reason for you to feel cheated. I thought it was a pretty good show last night. Let's talk a little bit here before we go about the WrestleMania press conference that took place today. I was live tweeting throughout the press conference. This was to announce the Mercedes-Benz Superdome in New Orleans, Louisiana, as the official location for WrestleMania 30. And they are going back to the Roman numerals, which I know there was some question about whether or not they would do that, being that the Roman numerals for WrestleMania next year are XXX. So they are going with the Roman numerals. It is Sunday, April 6th, 2014, is the date of the event. This was quite an interesting press conference. They were streaming it on WWE.com. And I'll just, you know, borrow from some of my tweets here, but they showed a recap package beforehand for WrestleMania 28, set to various songs. And one thing that really struck me while I'm watching this video package is the fact, you know, they were showing clips from the Kelly Maria Menounos tag match against Beth Phoenix and Eve Torres. And it struck me that less than a year later, all of those women are no longer in WWE. Kelly is gone. Beth Phoenix is gone. Eve Torres is gone. Maria Menounos was a celebrity for one match, so she's obviously gone. It just goes to show you, in my opinion, how far the women's division has fallen, especially losing Beth and Eve, I thought, were two really big blows. And the fact that we haven't even seen a Divas match on Raw for the past 2 weeks, and then finally they're on pay-per-view, and it's a three-minute afterthought, really, I think speaks volumes about the Divas division. And I go back to what I said on the year-end show, when I had my predictions for 2013. The Divas division is dead. We just don't know it yet. They just don't know it yet, I guess. They keep trotting the women out there, but it's dead. It's done. You know, unless they push to bring new blood in, which they could always do, and they've got some women, I guess, down in NXT right now. But unless they do that, this division is DOA. And that video really brought it home for me. So, at the press conference, out comes Brodus Clay and the Funkadactyls. Now, there was a small stage and a horde of media sitting in rows in front of the stage. So in front of the media, they trot out Brodus Clay and these two, you know, these two ladies wearing cheerleader outfits to dance, which seemed a little weird to me for a press conference, but okay. They had a whole bunch of people came out and spoke. The New Orleans mayor came out. He made the official announcement about Mania. Vince McMahon came out, showing no ill effects at all from hip surgery, and Brock Lesnar killing him a few weeks ago, and he looked none the worse for wear. He came out and talked about how WWE puts smiles on people's faces, which just gave me flashbacks to, you know, the aftermath of the Benoit tragedy, when Vince and Fit Finley, they sent all these people out to do these media interviews with the same talking points about how we put smiles on people's faces, we put smiles on people's faces. So that's what Vince was out there to talk about. We had a couple of other people came out and talked about how fun it was for them to have entrance music because they played music for people when they came out on stage, which again is something I don't think you would ordinarily see at a press conference. They had R-Truth made an appearance for the first time in quite a while. For those people who have emailed me asking if R-Truth was fired, he was not. I think I made mention of this a few weeks ago. He's been out healing up that nasty gash that he suffered in that match with Cesaro back in December at TLC. They did not want that gash to be infected in any way, and so they've kept him out of action. But there he was, still employed. He came out to rap. He was walking through the media crowd, like down the aisles, trying to get the media people to join in his rap. Very bizarre. And the GM came out of the Superdome. He's also the general manager of the New Orleans Arena, which I believe is where the Hall of Fame and Monday Night Raw, the day after Mania, will be taking place next year. Interestingly enough, he came out, he made mention of the fact that they first had the ability to bid on WrestleMania back in 2009. Which is when WrestleMania 25 took place. So that's how far back this process goes. And, you know, I haven't really talked about this too much, but, you know, I'm friendly with at least one person who has been privy to a lot of these conversations as far as, you know, host cities for WrestleMania and all that stuff. And, you know, I've known for a while that it was probably going to be New Orleans. It was pretty much a done deal. I know I've seen a lot of reports from pretty reputable wrestling sites that, you know, WWE was going back and forth on whether or not it should be Madison Square Garden, which is, you know, still hearing these reports a few weeks ago to me was just comical, just because this decision has been in the can for so long now. Just the thought that a month before they would make the announcement that they would suddenly change their minds is laughable to me. And this guy on stage pretty much confirmed it, that they were invited to WWE offices finally after their initial pitch at the end of 2011. And they're in a meeting with Vince and all of his people, and Vince just stops them in the middle of the meeting and says, just stop, just stop. I've made up my mind. You got it. You guys got WrestleMania. And he said the only caveat Vince told them was that they had to keep it a secret. And so basically they kept it a secret for 15 months. That's how far back it goes. That WrestleMania has been confirmed for New Orleans. So this has been a done deal for a while now. And if I had to venture a guess, I would say they've already got locations locked in for the next 2, maybe 3 years for WrestleMania. Certainly for next year. But probably even the year after that, maybe the year after that. They take care of this stuff now a long time in advance. And it's just a matter of whether or not somebody decides to blab and leak the news. And in this case, they kept it a secret for quite a while before it started to leak. And so I think they've got it locked in for the next couple of years, quite frankly. And if I had to take a guess, I would guess that if not next year, maybe the year after, they'll finally be in Dallas. I think a Cowboy Stadium WrestleMania is almost a lock. I don't know that for sure, but I would guess that's probably one of the locations that are locked in already for the next couple of years. I guess we'll see. Stephanie McMahon came out to her entrance music. She made a comment that that used to be her music. She's been all grown up now for quite a while, so that music doesn't really fit her anymore. Then again, Shawn Michaels is still coming out to Sexy Boy, and he's almost 50, so I guess it's, you know, it doesn't really matter. The Rock came out, he had the belt with him, talked about what New Orleans meant to him. He played football, you know, a couple football games there back in the day. John Cena was the main event. He came out in a suit, so no jorts and no t-shirt for him, no hat. You know, you watch Rock in a press conference setting like this, and you watch Cena, and it's just, it's glaring how different the two of them are. Rock goes out there, he's very laid back, you know, he's very conversational, he tries to tell stories that are funny or that'll, you know, people can relate to. John Cena goes out there, he's like a robot. He is like the perfect person for WWE to send out there for these things, because he's out there wearing a suit, and the way that Cena is speaking, he sounds like an executive in training. Like, if John Cena were to retire in the next year, he would fit in perfectly as an executive in WWE. He's just out there spouting off like a robot, you know, about what WrestleMania means and just whatever. Anyway, the final shot of the press conference, Rock came back out, shook Cena's hand, and they had a shot of Rock and Cena together on stage. That is your WrestleMania 29 main event. And I made a comment, and I didn't mean for this to be an indication that this is what they're actually going to do, but I just made a comment that perhaps I wonder if that could also be your WrestleMania 30 main event as well. You know, if John Cena wins this year, you now have both guys even at one win apiece. Perhaps WWE goes and does the rubber match at WrestleMania next year, which I do not want to see. Let me just make that clear right now. I do not want to see Rock vs. Cena at WrestleMania next year. You know, obviously we're going to get it again this year, and that's, you know, it's fine. But and I have no problem with them doing Rock vs. Cena, let's say, at SummerSlam if they wanted to have a tiebreaker. But I don't ever need to see any match 3 years in a row in the main event of WrestleMania. So that was just my initial thought. That wasn't me saying that that's the plan or anything like that. And that's it. So, cat's out of the bag. That's WrestleMania next year. I don't know if I'll be there or not, but I know a lot of people already talking about traveling to New Orleans. I've never been there myself. I would be kind of interested in going. It's going to be a matter of moolah, I think, at that point. So we'll see if I make the trek. But the other thing I just wanted to make mention of here before we wrap up, as far as WrestleMania next year is concerned, you know, if I had to take a guess at what, you know, a framework of what the card, the top three or four matches could be for WrestleMania, it's way too early, I understand, to be talking about WrestleMania 30. But, you know, I could envision a Rock-Brock Lesnar match. I've heard some murmurs of that. Rock and Brock, the one and only match they ever had was SummerSlam back in 2002, which was the last time Rock had the championship before this year. He put Brock over that year. And I've heard perhaps that's the direction they could go in for next year, Rock versus Brock. And I'd have no problem with that. Because what else does Rock do? I mean, think about it. You're not going to do Rock Cena again. So what other match really is there for The Rock? You know, Rock and Lesnar would seem to make sense for me. If they could convince Undertaker to come back, if Undertaker wrestles this year and he doesn't fall apart, you know, into a pile of dust, and he can come back for one more match, and they can really build this as The Undertaker's final match. I still maintain that Undertaker versus John Cena is the best WrestleMania match you could do. So, Undertaker against Cena, perhaps in Taker's last match. You know, Rock versus Brock. And apparently, whatever match Rock is in is going to be the main event. That's what I've heard. I don't know if that's stipulated in his contract, if that's just how WWE feels it should be. It appears that whatever match Rock is in is going to be the main event. So let's say you have Rock and Brock. You've got Taker and Cena. If they can convince Steve Austin to come back, and I've said this before, if Stone Cold doesn't come back for a match at WrestleMania next year, he's never coming back. I think WrestleMania 30 is it. They either get him for that or they don't. Because I can't think of a better time. I thought this year would be perfect. This year is 10 years since Austin wrestled his last match at a WrestleMania. And I would rather see Austin Punk than Undertaker Punk. Obviously, that's not going to happen. But Austin vs. Punk, I think, could still have a lot of juice to it. So you could potentially have a card with Undertaker, Cena, Rock, Brock, and Austin Punk on top, which I think would be a very, very strong lineup. But again, still a little too early to be talking about that. I guess we'll see what happens. So that's it. This was a special bonus episode. Just wanted to go over the Elimination Chamber stuff and talk about the WrestleMania press conference. You could follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster. And you can also send me emails and questions. We'll get back to the mailbag on next weekend's episode. We'll have a normal episode this weekend, 262. You can email me at thesolomonster @gmail.com, thesolomonster@gmail.com. And also friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/thesolomonster. Don't forget my latest Walking Dead blog is now up on layfieldreport.com, as well as my most recent wrestling column, which is, why is Colt Cabana not in WWE? Colt Cabana read it. You should too. So go to thelatefieldreport.com and check out those columns. We'll be back this weekend with a normal show. Until next time, be well, stay safe, enjoy Raw tonight, and we'll see you right back here this weekend.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solid Monster sounds off on SEScoops.com.